sick and tired of people who say that if you debate and you disagree with this administration, somehow you're not patriotic. And we should stand up and say, we are Americans and we have a right to debate and disagree with any administration.
Hey, everybody, this is Maggie, and welcome to the Unsolicited Opinion. How you doing today? Well, listen, if you want to call into this show today, 716-213-6816 is the number to do that, 716-213-6816. If you'd like to get in contact with me, my website is three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com, theunsolicitedopinion.com. I've got a lot of great information on my website, and I also have a store on there, too. I just created some T-shirts and... oh, what the hell do you call it? One of those things you carry stuff around, like a little bag to carry stuff around, and a coffee mug. And I'm going to add other things as my artistic juices start to flow and I decide what else I want to put on there. But anyway, hey, listen, if you're interested in the redistribution of the truth, if you like my radio show, there's some stuff on that store you may want to purchase. Hey, wear my T-shirts. Get the message of redistribution of the truth out there, would you please? Now, listen, I have my website was recently redone, and my friend rebuilt it for me, and my friend's business is called, isn't this terrible, because I am drawing an absolute blank. What is my friend's website called? Well, let's see. This is terrible, but you know what? This is absolutely terrible. I should have written it down. But if you go to the bottom of my website, you're going to see who Global Edge .net. Her company is called Global Edge Systems. GlobalEdge.net is the name of her website. Go there if you need some help with your computer or if you need a website built or any computer-related stuff. This is her shtick. That's what she loves to do. So listen, GlobalEdge.net is the name of her company, and that is where how your Global Edge Systems and GlobalEdge.net is her website. Go there. If you need some, she can do a lot of stuff remotely, so you don't have to be in the same town as I happen to be in with her to be able to get her help. Now, I just wanted to mention a couple things, and I'm going to be bringing my guest on in a minute or two, and my guest is William Taylor Real Ryle. I don't know. He told me last week I was mispronouncing his last name. I'm telling you, the mind is the first thing to go, and here I am today probably mispronouncing it, and I'm sure when I bring him on, he'll correct me as William Taylor Real Ryle. Ryle always likes to do. Actually, he can hear me now, so I'm kind of doing, I'm just kind of teasing him a little because I love to get his goat. But I just wanted to comment on the new dietary guidelines came out from Mo, Michelle Obama. I like to call her Mo. So Mo came out with the new dietary guidelines, and B.O. ate some chili dogs and French fries in order to celebrate these new dietary guidelines, which, of course, do not include chili dogs or French fries for you and me. But we don't want the hypocrite-in-chief, the hustler-in-chief, to let the truth stand in the way of his pigdom. And so Bo and Mo both are getting into some hot dogs, chili dogs and fries, and you and I, well, we're all going to get to eat lettuce. Maybe. Of course, that's because we're going to eventually down the road, we're going to be growing our own lettuce in our food shed, which will exist within a 100-mile radius of the pack and stack sardine can housing units we will be living in these cities that they're calling smart growth, which, of course, there's nothing smart about it at all. It's slave growth. I've renamed these so-called smart growth cities slave growth because all they really do grow is more slaves for the plantation that'll exist in the cities. Won't it be grand? Aren't you just happy about this whole thought? Isn't it going to be wonderful? Life will be so wonderful when the Bo and Mo get all this action going 100%. Of course, they've got a lot of buddies helping them in this whole UN Agenda 21 movement to enslave the world. They're not alone, and it wasn't their idea. They're just the latest culprits who are enacting the agenda and helping to move it forward. Aren't we lucky, America? Oh, we are blessed. We truly are blessed. And you know, there's one other thing I want to mention, then I'm going to bring Bill on. Actually, we're going to be going to a break in a couple of minutes, so I'll bring Bill on after the break. Time magazine is leaving out Herman Cain, who happens to be a black man, who happens to be a conservative black man. Well, they've been leaving him out of some of the articles they're writing about the potential the candidates running for office and what the odds are statistically on their being able to achieve the objective of becoming the president of the United States. Well, they're leaving Herman Cain out of the mix. Now, why do you think Time magazine is doing that? Is Time magazine racist? I ask you. Is Time Magazine racist and they just hate all black people and that's why they're not going to mention Herman Cain, who happens to be a black man, who if he wasn't involved with the Federal Reserve Board, I would think he'd be a pretty good guy candidate. I'm sure he's a pretty good guy, but his association and former leadership of the Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank, well, once you're a player in the whole Federal Reserve Bank game, I don't want to know nothing about you anymore after that, because the Federal Reserve Bank is the gangster crooks who've done more to damage this economy and this country than there are stars in the universe. But so anybody who's associated with them, they're kind of suspect to me. But unlike Time Magazine, it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that he happens to be a black man. But for Time Magazine's, I'm sure it has everything to do with he happens to be a black man, because they don't want anybody out there reading the magazine to recognize that there happen to be black people in this country who would be conservatives. They're not all liberals, and they're not all Democrats. Isn't that an amazing thing? I bet you didn't know that. Well, 'tis the truth. Anyway, I think what I'm going to do this morning is bring my buddy Bill on before we go to break. William, can you hear me?
I can, Maggie. It's good to be with you again today.
All right. So Ryle, real, some pitch.
It's Ryle.
Ryle. Okay. It, well, I got Ryle. It half right. I got it half right, Bill.
That's all right. The old story, call me anything, just call me for dinner.
Yeah, right. Don't call me late for supper. Do you remember, J.J. Johnson, who I think he used to come on Laughing. Do you remember that guy who'd come on? You can call me Ray, and you can call me Jay, and you can call me Johnny. Just don't call me Johnson. Do you remember that guy? Oh, he was funny.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, long time ago, huh, Bill?
That's right.
So where did we leave off last Sunday in our discussion? You were going over our system of government and why the Founding Fathers decided that a representative republic was a much better system of government as opposed to a democracy. Where did we leave off, Bill? Because I know we want to eventually, one of these Sundays, hit nullification. But where did we leave off? Do you remember? Because I don't, and I didn't bother to look it up. I'm negligent today, Bill.
We were winding up the discussion about the 14th Amendment and why it was not properly approved in Congress nor ratified by the required three fourths of the states.
Okay.
And this idea of democracy versus republic, Benjamin Rush, who was a founding father from Pennsylvania, coined the phrase mobocracy, to represent democracy, because the framers felt it was one of the worst forms of government. They never would have adopted that form of government. And in fact, as late as 1928, in a civics document written by the War Department to be given to the Army, which was used by the Army for education, they repeated that phrase, mobocracy, with respect to democracy. So for those who are skeptics that don't believe that the framers believed that democracy was one of the worst forms of government, even up in the 1928s, the federal government was recognizing that that was one of the worst kinds of government.
Bill, is there a place that we could access? I could put a link up to this 1928 document you referenced. Is there where did you find it? Can you get me that link and I can put it up on the website so people can actually take a look at that?
I haven't searched for it, and it's been a number of years. I did find the text and have a full copy of it, but let me get back with you. I'll give you that. I don't know that it's on the internet. I haven't researched it on the internet.
Okay.
But it may very well be there. There is so much available. If not, we can make some of it at least available on the Internet.
Okay.
Anyway, so the 14th Amendment, for those skeptics who don't believe that it is, in fact, null and void, there are a number of references. Here's a quote from a 1975 case from the Utah Supreme Court. His name was Justice Ellett. It says, the dissenting opinion asserts that the 14th Amendment is part of the Constitution of the United States. While this same assertion has been made by the United States Supreme Court, that court has never held that the amendment was legally adopted. I cannot believe that any court in full possession of its faculties could honestly hold that amendment was properly approved and adopted.
Bill, and on that, yeah. Bill, on that not thought, hold that because we're going to go to break. And we will be right back in about, 3 minutes, I guess, everybody. This is the Unsolicited Opinion. My name is Maggie, and I will be right back.
Throughout history, the power to issue money has been used to enslave man into a perpetual system of debt. Power of the Purse Volume 1 is a 4-hour and 50-minute documentary film that dissects the true history of the people who have controlled the monetary systems of the world. It exposes how bankers have historically engineered artificial economic booms and busts to consolidate wealth and power. It exposes the role of powerful banking interests funding both sides of major wars. From the Knights Templar to the corrupt central banking powers of today, this documentary provides an in-depth chronological look at the influence these powerful financial institutions have had on this world. The many illusions of the modern-day monetary system and how it has been used to turn people into slaves is fully revealed. Purchase your 2-DVD disc copy today at powerofthepursemovie.com. Again, that's powerofthepursemovie.com.
This July 4th, come join patriots from all across the great land in eastern Pennsylvania for Freedom Palooza, a 3-day festival of music and great speakers. Come party with the likes of former Congressman Jim Trafficant, and they railroaded that guy, Mark and Rose. Hey, I saw him in Freedom of Fascism. You want great rock? We got it. How about the most influential, hardest working band in the movement today? Poker Face. We got the Ameros. Burn the Ball Out. Amp Killer. Doug Hawk. Front to Enemy. The Grunts. Kinetic Blue. Payday Monsanto. Secret System Band. Scrap Metal Bomb. Rebel Inc. Man, that's a lot of bands. Camp out under the stars along the Delaware River like our founding fathers did before the Battle of Trenton. What else are you going to do on this 4th of July? Sit around with family members you hate? Listen to your fat uncle tell the same stories he tells every other year? No way, man. I'm going to Freedom Palooza. Go to freedompalooza.com for all the details. Freedompalooza.com.
Are you receiving payments on a private loan? Would you rather have the cash now? If you're getting monthly payments on any type of real estate, promissory note, or private loan, American Finder can help. American Finder are specialists in getting people cash for real estate notes of any kind. It's quick, easy, and 100% secure. American Finder works with investors who are interested in purchasing the note from you or your client so you can have the money you need. Now, no more worrying about late payments or non-payments any longer. Just like banks buy mortgages, thousands of private investors across the country buy notes from individuals. They collect monthly payments while you get the cash you need. Buyers are standing by now, waiting to make estimates on your note. Appraisals are free, and you are under no obligation on any offer. Get the most from your note before the dollar drops any lower. Contact American Finder today at www.cash4cashflows.com. That's www.cash4cashflows.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Maggie Rodden, and you're listening to The Unsolicited Opinion. And if you'd like to call into this show today, the telephone number is 716-213-6816, 716-213-6816. If you'd like to get in contact with me, my website is 3 words, theunsolicitedopinion.com, theunsolicitedopinion.com. Listen, I got some great stuff. I set up a store on my website, so if you like my show and you want to help me redistribute the truth, then go on there, buy a coffee mug, buy a t-shirt, buy a bag to carry around all the important information that you like to carry around. I'm always carrying papers around with me, but then I'm just one of those people who likes words written on paper. That's all I got to say about that. But I am joined this morning by William Taylor Ryle, and he's my buddy here outside of Philadelphia. He is a constitutional scholar, self-taught. He's been studying the Constitution for 21 years, and thank God you have, Bill, because it's obvious none of our elected officials can be bothered to do that. So it's a good thing we got people like you, Bill, who bother to take the time to understand what it is exactly our founding fathers meant and how very fortunate and very lucky we are. And obviously, I think God had a big role in the creation of this, putting these brilliant men together who were able to think outside of the box. And I really hate that expression, but to use that cliche, they really were able to recognize and understand. They knew history and they knew what to avoid. And unfortunately, Bo and Mo and all the other characters leading the carnival parade don't feel that same way. They think destroying what was the greatest nation in the world is their objective, and somehow that'll be a better way for people on the planet to live if the United States is a communist country. But anyway, back to where you left off, Bill, when we had to go to break.
Yeah, I agree with you. And if you think about it, only certain attorneys and certain judges and certain professors of law have been in a position to affect this change. I think the simple logic to that would be if the courts were operating according to the framers' intent and the Constitution's, both state and federal, intent, anyone could file a suit against people who violate the Constitution. The jury would judge the law and the facts, and the guilty parties would be going to jail, paying the fine, or both. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen because the prime movers in this agenda have been certain attorneys, certain judges, and certain professors of law. And so I think we need to focus on the real cause. At any rate, I mentioned that there are, by the way, there are some good jurists in the country. We just need to search them out. But this jurist in the case in Utah, which is Utah versus Phillips, the 1975 case, I quoted, and at the end of the quote that I just made, saying that he doubted that anyone in their right mind, in essence, would hold that the 14th Amendment was properly approved or adopted. He cites another case which occurred in 1968, and he, of course, was the one who issued that opinion as well. It's Diet versus Turner, 20 Utah, 2nd, 403, 1968 case. And there he goes into great length about talking about how the 14th Amendment came about, details with great specificity as to how it was wrong, and that's a good read. In fact, his introduction to his position on the 14th Amendment is quite moving. But he wasn't the originator of that thought. Other attorneys had written about it previously. In fact, for those of people who are listening who want to check all this out, simply type in Diet versus Turner, 1968, and you can find that online. You can also find a Tulane Law Review article, 28, which was written in 1953, and the title of that is The Dubious Origin of the 14th Amendment, written by an attorney, Sutton. Another reference was done in 1959 in the South Carolina Law Quarterly, Volume 2, and the title of that article is The 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States and the Threat that it Poses to Our Democratic Government, written by another attorney, McElry. And it's interesting that in 1959 they refer to a democratic government, because in reality, at best, it was a democratic government in 1953 and 59. The final one that I would suggest that people look at is a report that was placed in the Congressional Record in 1967. You can find that by simply typing in Congressional Record, the 14th Amendment. And the title of that article that was put in the Congressional Record was, quote, The 14th Amendment, Equal Protection or Tool or Usurpation. And it starts on page 15641, for those of you who are interested in looking at it. It's available in several different locations. In fact, if you want to really investigate the 14th Amendment, the Internet is a good place to start. But at the end of this report, the author happened to be Judge Perez from Louisiana, writes the following. It should need no further citations to sustain the proposition that neither the joint resolution proposing the 14th Amendment nor its ratification by the required three-fourths of the states of the Union were in compliance with the requirements of Article 5 of the Constitution. The listeners may remember that Article 5 talks about how to amend the Constitution. The Congress can do it by proposing an amendment, and two-thirds of those approving it in both houses, or two-thirds of the state legislatures can propose an amendment. And then the ratification, which is determine the method, either by conventions of the legislatures of the states or a vote of the legislature of the states or conventions of the people of the states, can determine whether it becomes part of the Constitution if three-fourths of those bodies ratify. And those are the only two methods that can occur. And once the Congress determines an amendment or sends it out for ratification, whichever method that's going to be used, Congress has no role in the ratification. It either passes or it doesn't. And we talked about how the 14th Amendment never met that.
Never
so continuing
again.
On this, right, continuing on in this entry in the Globe Report, it says the courts bound by oath to support the Constitution should review all of the evidence herein submitted and measure the facts proving violations of the mandatory provisions of the Constitution with Article 5, and finally rendering judgment declaring that said purported amendment never to have been adopted as required by the Constitution. The Constitution makes it the sworn duty of judges to uphold the Constitution, which strikes with nullity the 14th Amendment. It's an interesting statement, isn't it?
Yeah,
why
it really
haven't judges done that? Right? So,
Bill.
Yeah.
Do you have? Can you give me a list of all these different cases you reference? Because I'll put them up on my website so people can take a look at that. Because I don't know how many people listening bother to have a pencil in hand, and I don't want you to repeat all those cases you mentioned. But you know, send that to me, and I'll put it up on the website under the tab I'm going to put up with your name on it, so that all this stuff you reference in our conversations actually exists on the internet someplace, so people can go and find them, Bill, because I know that you didn't put them up on your website yet, Bill.
I'll talk about that with you after the show. Any rate, this particular entry makes a point that I think is crucial to the remedy as to why we're in trouble today.
Oh,
and it says that the Constitution strikes with nullity that which does violence to its provisions. There is no need for any law or any repeal or any of that. The constitutions, be it the state or federal constitution,
hang on to that note, because the music's playing, and which means we're going to be going to break. So we will be right back in a couple minutes, everybody. This is the Unsolicited Opinion. My name is Maggie, and I will be back with Bill Ryle in about 3 minutes, so hang in there.
Free speech guaranteed. You're listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network.
With IRN USA Radio News, I'm Jordan Hooker. Speaking in Croatia, Pope Benedict has denounced the denigration of family life in Europe. Benedict is calling for couples to make a commitment to marry and have children. The Pope is calling on couples to commit and not just live with each other. Tens of thousands of people attended the open-air mass on Sunday. Preparing for retirement on June 30th, Defense Secretary Robert Gates says he worries that troops are withdrawn from Afghanistan too soon. He is making a two-day farewell tour to remote U.S. bases. Gates is assessing the situation on the ground. The lack of a body is the only thing preventing Pakistani security officials from 100% confirmation of the death of an Al-Qaeda leader. Elias Kashmiri was believed to have been killed in a U.S. missile strike on Friday. He is suspected in numerous attacks, including the 2008 siege in Mumbai, India. This is IRN USA Radio News.
If you're expecting a baby or a grandchild, or maybe you have a friend who's expecting, I have an idea for the perfect baby gift. Don't do the whole diaper baby basket. Everybody does that. They're going to get plenty of that stuff. Here's a gift that lasts a lifetime. Reading. We have an amazing offer today on the Your Baby Can Read program. This is the program that teaches infants and toddlers to read. I've seen the videos of these kids reading. It's absolutely amazing. Studies prove that early readers perform better in school and later in life. They have more self-esteem, and they're more likely to stay off drugs. The researchers tell us that the best time for kids to learn a language is before age 5, because that's when over 90% of brain development takes place. Your Baby Can Read gives you a chance to make a powerful difference. They're going to let the first 200 callers try the Your Baby Can Read program absolutely risk-free. So if you're a parent or grandparent, or you know someone who's expecting, here's your chance. Call now. 1-800-813-8976. 1-800-813-8976. 1-800-813-8976.
Radio X.
Radio X.
Your host, Jimmy X.
Sunday afternoons, 1 to 3 Eastern, here on the Orion Talk Radio Network.
This is Maggie Rodden, and you're listening to The Unsolicited Opinion. And if you'd like to call into this show this morning, or this afternoon, I guess, where I am, maybe it's still this morning for people on the West Coast, I guess it is, 716-213-6816 is the number. 716-213-6816 is the number. My guest today is William Taylor Ryle. He is a buddy of mine here outside of Philadelphia. He is a constitutional scholar. He has been studying the Constitution for 21 years, and as I've said previously, Bill, I wish all of our elected officials and our judges and all of those people would have done the same thing. So maybe, perhaps, I don't know, larceny knows no allegiance to anything, but perhaps some of them would choose and make other decisions. I don't know. There's always hope. Hope springs eternal, right? However,
And probably everybody remembers that the courts claim that they have the sole authority to interpret the Constitution, and they base that on a 1803 decision by Justice Marshall in Marbury versus Madison. Most people remember that case, and that was supposed to be where the courts started their grab for power. And if one reads that case, Marshall was really saying that, the courts, like the other departments, had authority to interpret the Constitution and were required to follow it. And so, this again is a perversion of the true meaning of court decisions. Now, yes, he did manipulate that case in order to be able to take that position, but nevertheless, it's a true statement. Everyone in government has a fundamental oath-driven responsibility to determine what they're going to do is or isn't unconstitutional, and not to do that which is unconstitutional before they do it. Unfortunately, most people don't read, like you said, read the Constitution to understand them, and then they act, and usually those in the legislature, and this has been said to me many times, well, if we do something unconstitutional, somebody will follow suit, and it'll go to court, and it'll get resolved by the court. What a ridiculous concept.
Yeah, it really is, and, Bill.
All right, because there's no, what I say to them is, did attorneys take your oath? Did a judge take your oath? No, you did. It's your duty, your fundamental duty, to understand and to strictly follow the Constitution, be it state or federal, depending on what applies. So this entry And the Globe Report refers to that case, Marbury versus Madison, and press, actually, Marshall said that it was worse than solemn mockery and equally a crime not to follow your oath of office, and that it applied to all the departments, actually legislative as well as the judiciary, but the Constitution applies to all departments and the institutions. He closes out his quote in the Globe Report, this is Perez from Louisiana, saying that it would take an aroused public to, I'll read that, to preserve the Constitution and our institutions and freedoms under constitutional government. Wow. And the future security of our country will only will break this political barrier, which now prevents judicial consideration of the unconstitutional of the 14th Amendment. So in 1967, the entry in the Globe Report was saying the courts aren't going to do it. The Supreme Court's not going to do it, obviously, so it's going to take an aroused citizenry. 1967, and here we are in 2011, and we're seeing that aroused citizenry wake up. And so the tools that are provided here in writing is amazing. Remember, the Constitution strikes with nullity that which does violations to its provisions, end quote. We have the tools. The solution is to understand and to hold all those in government responsible to the law. Because court decisions are not law. They are evidence of what the law is. They are in themselves not law. And for those of you doubt, we talked about this a little bit. Look at Swift versus Tyson. It's an 1842 case. Justice Story, speaking for the men in the Supreme Court, made that statement. I paraphrased it a bit, but it was repeated in a Tompkins, Erie Railroad versus Tompkins, 1937.
You know, Bill, I'm going to interrupt you here for a second. I finished the first year of law school, and it's funny, and then I decided to quit and do something else entirely. But it's interesting because I remember all these cases. And in fact, I think it was in civil, it had to be civil procedure where they referenced these cases, I believe. But it's interesting because these are the significant cases. I believe it was civil procedure. I don't think it was torts, because I had taken torts, civil procedure, property law, and I can't think of the fourth course right now. But it's interesting because these are the significant cases that they teach aspiring attorneys. These are the cases they utilize. These ones you mentioned, Swift v. Tyson, Marbury v. Madison, those are the cases that are in the law school textbooks that they reference.
Yeah, I'm not sure they reference Swift. They reference Erie Railroad.
They did reference Swift.
That's good. That's good to know. In Erie Railroad, it does repeat this and talks about it being a unanimous decision of the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Now, it's interesting that the courts keep vacillating, and they use decisions to change what is supposed to be the law. Well, it can't be the law. All right, judges can't make law, right?
They don't know that, Bill.
Well, they should know it. And as you know, they make decisions, and those decisions might be evidence of the law, as Story said, but they're not law in themselves. So if, in fact, the decision is constitutional, and it's often not these days, and so one has to be very skeptical of what a court might hold. So I will send those references. There are many more. Again, you can get on the Internet and type in 14th Amendment, always being conscious that there could be bad information on the Internet as well as good, and so check it out to make sure it's correct. So beyond the 14th Amendment, so we talked about last time it changing the relationship between the states and the central government. First, okay, the states were the ones that formed the government. They, in fact, were the members of the compact that wrote and ratified the Constitution. And the central government was supposed to be the agent of the states, operating in areas where they were common. And so one has to go back and look at the intent of the framers and the intent of provisions in the Constitution to truly understand what was meant and therefore what they're supposed to be deciding in courts. Unfortunately, courts don't do that these days. They use the modern interpretation, or it's a living document concept, which is ludicrous.
They use the social justice concept of feelings and gotta be, you know, well, do they deserve to be punished or do they deserve to be rewarded?
Well, if you're looking at equity and the issue is not constitutional, I suppose that's appropriate. But it's not when it comes to fundamental issues of law. And they just take this, you're right, equal justice concept or progressivism, whatever you want to call it, to say we have to take care of the poor and we have to make sure that everybody is equal.
That's social justice. They don't use equal justice. Equal justice would be blind. Social justice isn't blind.
Fair enough. But this idea that everybody's supposed to be equal, that's not what the Constitution nor the framers understood. We have an equal opportunity. We don't have, in other words, government's not supposed to put up barriers to your opportunity to prosper, which, by the way, they do quite frequently.
All the time.
Or take from you and give to somebody else. That's called stealing in any other situation other than government. So what we were faced with is those in government, particularly in the courts, not operating according to the law. Now, the last time I checked, when you operate outside the law,
it's illegal.
They call that being an outlaw.
There you go.
Operating outside the law is outlaw. And so maybe that's an appropriate phrase to apply to many of those in government today. And I would hope that they would take the information and then come back in compliance with the law. If not, I think they should choose the admirable thing to do, and that's resign. But then that sort of upset some folks. At any rate, getting back to why we got in this mess, the attorneys and judges were very active. In 1891, they formed the National Commissioners of Uniform State Laws, which most people haven't heard of and probably is a bit much to talk about today. But they set about in 1892, to unify the laws across the country using various methods. But they said in their 1991...
Hang on, Bill, because that music's playing means we're going to be going to break. So hold that thought. We'll be right back in a couple minutes. This is The Unsolicited Opinion. My name is Maggie, and we will be right back in about 2 minutes, everybody. So hang in there.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
Imagine no longer being tied down to your computer, but having the freedom to take live talk radio with you anywhere you go. TalkStream Live introduces our first ever iPhone application. The talk shows you follow now follow you, and your iPhone is now the fastest and easiest way to stay connected to the best talk radio on the internet. Let TalkStream Live transform the way you listen to radio. Listen to live talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mobile talk radio from TalkStream Live. Now available in the iTunes App Store.
Now you can listen to the Orion Talk Radio Network on your phone, anywhere, anytime, with our Listen by Phone feature. Just call 704-772-7627. 704-772-7627. Then enter the code 10016. That's 10016. All long distance and cell phone charges apply. Powered by UpSnap.
Lee Rogers here. The global controllers are continuing their quest to enslave humanity and form their new world order. The one thing standing in their way are free thinkers who reject collectivism and support individual liberty. In these troubled times, it is imperative that we the people are not destroyed for our lack of knowledge, but are instead empowered with information. RogueGovernment.com and BlacklistedNews.com are two of the best sources of alternative news and information on the internet. Whether it's geopolitics, globalism, government corruption, the unraveling global economy, staged elections, false flag terrorism, the technological control grid, martial law, the police state, or other issues of real significance, you'll find them on these websites. RogueGovernment.com and BlacklistedNews.com feature raw, fully sourced information with no intrusive advertisements. Be sure to visit these sites and empower yourself with the news and information the corporate control mockingbirds don't want you to know about.
Hey everybody, this is Maggie and you're listening to The Unsolicited Opinion, and we did have a little technical difficulty there. I'm hoping Bill can hear me. Bill, can you hear me?
I'm calling in on this line.
Okay, good. Yeah, then you're back with us again. I don't know what happened. We got thrown out of the system, so I had to reconnect us. But anyway, we've got, this is the last segment of the show, Bill. Now, when we went to break, I had to interrupt you again, but the music plays and we've only got like 20 seconds and then we're instantly cut off. So where you left off, Bill, please.
Yeah, I was bringing up an organization of attorneys and judges that was formed in 1891, which most people don't know about. It's called the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws.
Okay.
And they met in Saratoga Springs, New York in 1891 and formed this conference.
What was the purpose of the conference, Bill?
Well, it was to unify the laws.
Okay.
And in fact, you might recall that after the war between the states, things changed quite drastically. And in fact, the New Era Bar Association was formed in 1898. The Banking Association was formed in 1875, and there are just multitude of these organizations that grew up after the war between the states, taking advantage of the changes that occurred based on that war and the subsequent amendments.
Okay.
That is the 13th, 14th, and 15th. So here these attorneys get together, and in 1991, they're celebrating their 100 years of work, and here's what they wrote in the preface to this book that they published, which, by the way, at the time didn't have an ISBN number. It was only for attorneys and judges, apparently, but I did find it in the law library, and I think subsequently they have made it available. But here's what it says on the introduction. It says, for the first 100 years, this system of legal diversity worked fairly well. In one sense, the Civil War grew out of deciding the non-uniform state law concerning slavery. Talk about that another day. Not necessarily true. But then it goes on to say, but after that war, as the nation came together again, moved westward, expanded its borders, began industrialize, and acquired the means of transcontinental travel, the need for a common, predictable, nationwide legal system became crucial. Now, I'll break this quote for a minute. This country was built on the concept of independent sovereign states doing their thing, and the central government being an agent of those states to make things work better between the states and with foreign countries. So here we have a bunch of attorneys and judges deciding, hey, that system's no good. So they want to change it. Now, going on with this quote, quote, there were at least two methods for unifying the legal system of the states. State law could be preempted by the federal government through the repeal of the 10th Amendment. Who? That was treasonous then, wouldn't it? Violating the Constitution, just preempting it, doing away with it. Had they done that in 1891, I think we'd been back at war, but that's just my opinion. Going on with a quote, or by expansive interpretation of the Commerce Clause and other express powers delegated to Congress.
Well, that's the route they chose, because the Commerce Clause interferes with everything, which is why they're trying to push that whole health care bill, saying it's a part of commerce, whether or not you
have
health care is nonsense. But anyway.
They've actually done both. They've obliterated the 10th Amendment. Now the states are irrelevant. And we're trying to get that back by saying, hey, the Constitution makes it very clear. In fact, the reason for the Bill of Rights, those last two amendments, the 9th and 10th Amendments, were to prevent what the federal government has done since the war between the states. But clearly the courts have not been enforcing the law. Anyway, so this court goes on to say, alternatively, the states could create a forum and a vehicle by which they could voluntarily agree to develop and then separately adopt uniform legislation on important subjects of common concern. That was the path chosen in 1891 when the conference was conceived. It is probably not coincidence that the origin of the conference occurred during the centennial celebration of the Bill of Rights and the 10th Amendment. This is, unquote, this is right out of their own book. They're telling us that they, in fact, have intentionally subverted our constitutions, and they have obliterated the state's authorities, and it grows by the day. But what I'm saying is it's been going on for a long, long time, aggressively since the war between the states. And in fact, they have obliterated the 10th Amendment allegedly, perverted the meaning and so forth. And we don't have rights according to the federal government. So there are lots and lots of things. And I'm not sure we have time to get into the next one, which I'd like to raise. So I'd sort of provide a teaser for perhaps next week. And that is the New Deal and FDR and his war and emergency powers. Now, keep in mind that Lincoln actually started this war of emergency powers in April 15th, 1861, by issuing the first war powers after the start of the war. And that continued for quite some time. In fact, Lincoln prosecuted that war totally outside the Constitution. He issued money. He suspended the writ of habeas corpus, which he had no authority to do. He declared war, which he had no constitutional authority to do. And he went back and Congress forgave him and said that everything that he'd done here before and everything he would do hereafter is hereby confirmed and approved, end quote. Made Lincoln, in essence, a dictator during the war. Now, people claim, well, during war, certain things occur, but it doesn't give the president absolute dictatorial powers. It only...
I was just going to say, well, Woodrow Wilson locked up his opponents. Roosevelt did the same thing, locked up the Japanese and interred Germans and that in this country. I mean, we've had presidents who act like dictators, have had presidents who act like dictators on more than one occasion, as if, you know, they are the kings of the fiefdom and they can do whatever they want to do.
Well, they think they can.
Exactly.
They do it, but the point is, it started with the 14th Amendment, and I don't believe that Lincoln's position was ever rescinded. The reason Wilson started doing that is because of this alleged 14th Amendment, which pretty much changes the way the government is supposed to work in this country. And then, of course, Wilson got away with it for a number of reasons, but again, because of the attorneys and judges supporting this, and the politicians and bankers paying for it and all of that. But if you go back and look at that, Wilson's administration actually passed the Trading with Enemies Act, the Congress, in October 6, 1917. And that particular act was used by FDR in 1933, March the 9th, 1933, in a war of emergencies act, banking at the time, March the 6th, was declared to be a banking holiday. You can get on the internet and see that. And March the 9th, they opened the banks, and they done away with the redeemable notes and replaced them with Federal Reserve notes, had seized the gold in 35.
Yeah, that's when they took all the gold, right?
Right. And so we don't have time to explore that. I'd like to continue this next time in that this is another major step, and that is the War and Emergency Powers, which this country has been under since March the 9th, 1933.
All right.
And it's confirmed.
We'll get into that next time, Bill, and then maybe one of these weeks we'll get into nullification, too. But
well,
which is fine.
All of this stuff is important.
But it's all the same because the solution is the same. Since all of these things that the government has done are unconstitutional, the Constitution strikes with nullity that which does violence to its provisions.
All right.
Very important thing. There is hope here. It's the law.
And some very important things you're going to do is send me all of this stuff that you want me to put up on my website so people can look at what it is you refer to, what you're referencing here. And then we'll, I guess, why don't you just come back again next Sunday, Bill, and we'll continue this. And maybe one of the Sundays we'll get into nullification. But it makes it, you know, there's no rush. It doesn't matter. But there's a lot of different topics I think are very relevant that, you know, what you're very knowledgeable about that people need to understand and recognize why things are the way they are and who did what and when and where and so on and so forth. So let's do that. You can give your website out, but I don't know. I haven't looked at it, Bill. I don't know if you put anything up there, but you're more than welcome to put the website up. And then I'm going to say goodbye after that and bring you back next Sunday at noon. William Taylor Ryle will be with me again, and we'll talk about maybe nullification. If not, it'll be something else constitutional. So your website, Bill, is?
Yes. It's Pennsylvania Patriot Press. Excuse me. Pennsylvania Committee of Correspondents .blogspot.com.
Okay. Listen, Bill, I got to let you go here because we've only got about another minute to go in the show. I want to thank you again for coming on, William Taylor Ryle. And I'm going to start putting put a tab up on my website, theunsolicitedopinion.com, with all of Bill's stuff that he sends to me. Hint, hint, Bill, start sending. And Bill will be back next week, and we'll continue the discussion of the Constitution because I think it's so critical that everybody understands what the document really means. So thanks for joining me, Bill. I appreciate it, as always.
Thank you, Maggie. Certainly did enjoy it. Thank you.
Okay. Next Sunday at noon. Hey, everybody, listen, I love to go to Oz. Somewhere Over the Rainbow is a wonderful place to be. Listen, you got to keep your chin up, kiddos. Better days are coming. We have people like William Taylor Ryle in the world who are fighting for you and I. Hey, I'll be back. You can hear me on Tuesday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Go to my website to find out the information on how to hear me. Take care, everybody. Chin up.
You know what Miss Gus says she was going to do to Toto? She says she
now,
was going to...
Now, Dorothy, dear, stop imagining things. You always get yourself into a fret over nothing. Now, you just help us out today and find yourself a place where you won't get into any trouble.
Some place where there isn't any trouble.
Do you suppose there is such a place, Toto?
There must be. It's not a place you can get to by a boat or a train. It's far, far away. Behind the moon, beyond the rain.
Drops away above the chimney tops. That's where